Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I got a really juicy one today. In fact, I'm really surprised I did not know about this earlier. I heard about this a couple of days ago, but apparently it happened way back in April, or at least the whole thing started to unfold back then. But this is an article by Daniel Goldman. It's on Medium. It's a Medium publication, the Abacus Crypto Journal. Which I actually don't know this one, and I'm going to kind of dig through and kind of see what other articles they have. But this one by Goldman is titled, The Verge Hack Explained. So if you didn't know that the cryptocurrency Verge, which is a quote-unquote privacy coin, had been very seriously compromised recently, you're about to learn all about it. So again, this one is titled, The Verge Hack Explained. Time warps, mining exploits, denial of service, and more. Cryptocurrency enthusiasts are keen on telling ordinary civilians how safe and secure the blockchain protocols powering their favorite coins are. Indeed, major cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum have maintained their security quite well, better arguably than any other digital asset or payment system in history, which is pretty remarkable considering that they are unbacked digital money, free from any single party's control, with an effective multi-billion dollar bounty on their proverbial heads. Many, however, will go a step further and declare said cryptocurrencies to be literally, quote, unhackable. This is, at the very least, a tactical error, since the proliferation of the unhackable meme forces the enthusiasts into some awkward positions when and if certain events unfold, like, say, a hack. In such an event, it seems that, if nothing else, an explanation is in order. Last month, an as-of-yet unidentified attacker was able to severely compromise Verge, a relatively small, privacy-focused cryptocurrency. The mystery hacker managed to dominate the network on three occasions for intervals of several hours at a time over the course of April 4th to 6th. Preventing any other user from making any payments. Worse, in that interval, they were able to generate what is effectively counterfeit Verge at a rate of 1,560 Verge coins, roughly $80, per second, minting what amounted to over $1 million worth of the currency. No need to beat around the bush. This was a disaster. The thing was hacked to high heaven. But who's to blame? Is this a case of human error on the part of the Verge developers, an undermining of crypto fundamentals, or something in between? Could such a thing happen again, perhaps to larger currencies? And if so, what could be done to prevent it? With these sorts of breaches, many details inevitably remain murky. However, in this case, the fundamental exploits can be fairly clearly understood. Onward. Timestamp spoofing, or honest mistakes versus dangerous lies. The root of the exploit is something that would appear prima facie to be a bug, but is actually a deliberate feature, the ability to create, quote, inaccurate timestamps. In blockchain protocols, individual transactions, usually payments from one party to another, are grouped together into a single block, which is then confirmed as a whole. Every block comes with a timestamp of its creation date. Even when a blockchain protocol is functioning properly, The ordering of these timestamps may sometimes be out of sequence. For example, block 100 may have a timestamp that actually comes after block 101. This is because in decentralized networks that obstinately refuse to grant any special authority to third parties, accurately enforcing time synchronization is no simple matter. Given the unpredictable variance in the time it takes for data to propagate through the peer-to-peer network, it's entirely possible for block times to appear out of order, even when all parties are being perfectly honest. In other words, it's only fair to allow some degree of flexibility. In the case of Verge, well, before the hack anyway, the protocol allowed nodes to disagree about the current time by a window of, at most, 2 hours. The entry point for the hacker was to start spoofing timestamps, submitting blocks that appear to be from the past but are still within the allotted 2-hour window, and thus eligible for acceptance by the other nodes. Why this would ultimately matter for network security has to do with the nature of proof-of-work mining. Mining difficulty, or gates only work when they're raised. Keeping the Verge network decentralized requires ensuring that fairly small-scale devices, MacBooks, say, can participate in running the network software. This in turn means limiting the volume of payment activity on the network, i.e. setting a clear target block time, and in turn a limit on the network's transactions per second. For Verge, the target is one block per 30 seconds. Now, one might well ask, given that the network is decentralized, how could this be enforced? What's stopping parties from submitting blocks at a much faster rate? This is no trivial problem, given that an accepted block earns its submitter a block reward. It's in the submitter's incentive to confirm blocks as fast as possible. The answer, in short, is proof-of-work mining. For a block to be considered valid by the network, it must contain a solution to a cryptographically difficult computational problem, derived directly from the data in the block itself. The nature of this problem is such that the difficulty can be freely adjusted. The target block time for Verge is one block every 30 seconds, and the difficulty of mining blocks is constantly being adjusted based on the current rate of block confirmations. So if more people decide to devote more mining power to generating Verge blocks, and more blocks get mined faster, the protocol increases mining difficulty and block submission is throttled. Conversely, as mining power lowers and block time increases, mining is made easier. Thus, when properly functioning, even as messy real-world factors change, like economic fluctuations, market prices of crypto, energy markets, empires rising and falling, etc., the Verge network is perpetually reacting and guiding the network to our target block rate equilibrium. The algorithm that Verge uses to calculate the current difficulty is known as dark gravity wave. It involves taking a weighted average of the rate of block confirmations over a moving 2-hour window. It's a bit complex, and the details don't really matter here. What matters is this. Mining difficulty is a function of recent block frequency, and running calculations on block frequency naturally involves looking at blocks' timestamps. And hence the problem. If enough faulty timestamps are getting created, all bets are off. And this is what the hacker did. Examining the blockchain data reveals that throughout the duration of the hacks, every other block was submitted with a timestamp roughly 1 hour before the present time, tragically confusing the protocol's mining adjustment algorithm. If the protocol were sentient and fluent in English, it would be saying something like, "Oh no, not enough blocks have been submitted recently. Mining must be too difficult. Let's make it easier." Since timestamps were continuously being spoofed, The protocol continuously lowered the difficulty until mining got laughably easy. To give a general idea, the average difficulty in the hours before the initial attack was 1,393,093.39131, while during the attack, it got as low as 0.0004414, a decrease in difficulty of over 99.999999%. Lower difficulty in submitting a block means more blocks get submitted. In this case, roughly a block every second. The cleverness of this attack is in how it circumvents the barrier of mining difficulty, instead of attempting to burst through it. If the security provided by mining power is a gate surrounding the network, a gate that's far too strong to break through and too high to climb over, this hack gets past it by finding a way to lower it so close to the ground that it can just be stepped over. If it isn't already obvious, this is in and of itself bad news. A violation of the intended protocol this blatant is simply not a good look. Additionally, the drastically increased block submission rate means lots of more newly mined verge than the protocol had allotted, which is bound to bother you if you're the sort of economist who has a thing for sound money with predictably high stock-to-flow ratio. However, lowering the difficulty is only half the story. In isolation, it wouldn't actually give the attacker any advantage. With the difficulty drastically lowered, mining blocks does become easier for the attacker, but it also becomes easier for everyone else. Miners are still competing against each other, just like before. What we would expect to see is that although, yes, blocks get mined faster, the identities of the successful miners should be just as distributed and democratic as before. Or put another way, no matter the difficulty, a single attacker would still need 51% of the mining power to dominate the network, which is just as hard as it was to do before the attack. However, this hacker did indeed take over the entire network, and was able to do so with far less than 51% of the hash rate. What enabled them to do this is the second component of this exploit, which has to do with Verge's use of multiple mining algorithms. Verge mining, or when five algorithms aren't better than one. Generally, blocks in proof-of-work-based cryptocurrencies are mined by a single algorithm, the most common being SHA-256. Verge, however, allows miners to use any of five different algorithms. For those dying to know, the algorithms Verge uses are Script, X17, Lyra2Rev2, Miragrossel, and Blake2S. The rationale for using multiple mining algos is something like this. Some critics of Bitcoin argue that over time, the Bitcoin mining industry has gotten too specialized and centralized. Most mining of the currency, for example, is performed by Bitcoin ASICs, devices created for the sole purpose of mining the currency. And much of Bitcoin mining is performed by a few mining pools, groups of miners that amalgamate their resources together and share the rewards proportionally. These trends towards different types of, quote, centralization, they say, are antithetical to the fundamental value proposition of permissionless cryptocurrencies. Having a coin use multiple mining algorithms purports to be a bulwark against these trends. The argument goes that controlling five different algorithms in terms of hardware, industry, and resource management is bound to be harder than controlling just one, pushing the Verge mining economy in the more distributed, decentralized direction. So here's the deal. The only way for this to properly function, and quote, properly functioning in this case includes maintaining 30-second block times, keeping all five algorithms economically sound for miners, and preventing one of the five algorithms from dominating, which would render the whole experiment pointless, is to have each algorithm have its own difficulty parameter that gets adjusted independent of the other four. Which is to say, Scrip's mining difficulty is adjusted to hit 30-second block equilibrium, as is X17's, and so on. What this means is that our timestamp forger didn't actually lower the difficulty of mining for the whole network. He only lowered it for those mining with one of the five algorithms. Script, it turns out. So while the script miners now all enjoy comically easy mining difficulty, the miners utilizing the other four algorithms are stuck having to work just as hard as before, rendering all of their hash power effectively useless for securing the network. Crucially, this meant that the attacker only had to mine with the script algorithm and only had to compete against the others doing the same. Thus, required hash power for our attacker to dominate goes from over 50%, dominating the whole network, to just over 10%, dominating the other script miners. Now at this point, things do get a bit speculative, but it would appear that the situation was a lot worse than even that. The quote 10% estimate stems from the fact that given the nature of mining difficulty adjustment, roughly the same amount of economic resources should be applied to each of the five mining algorithms. Reality, however, often has a way of stubbornly refusing to conform to the axioms of free market economics. According to discussions within the community, various factors, the existence of script ASICs that had yet to be deployed, the spare resources available for rent via NiceHash, etc., meant that script would, at the time of the attack, have been far cheaper to dominate than any of the other four algorithms. One can safely assume that required hash rate ultimately comes to far less than 10%. Some back-of-the-napkin estimates on Reddit place it as low as 0.4%. So in sum, timestamp spoofing made it possible to drastically lower mining difficulty. Verge's use of five algorithms meant that one could lower the difficulty of just one of them, thus making it far easier to override the whole network. The economic industrial status of this one particular mining algorithm made it even easier to dominate still. And finally, the drastically decreased block times ensuing from the low difficulty made the attack roughly 30 times more profitable than it would otherwise be. Lessons learned. What can be gleaned from all of this? The short-term aftermath of the hack was predictably messy and confusing. After a rough few days, the core developers deployed some quick bug fixes, which may or may not have had mistakes embedded in them, and the network eventually underwent a hard fork, which may or may not have initially been an accident. As for the response in the world at large, in the week following the hack, the price of Verge increased by 30%. And in the following week, it was announced that Verge would be accepted as subscription payment for Pornhub.com. Exactly how the largest protocol-level hack of a cryptocurrency in recent memory could precede said cryptocurrency increasing in price and then announcing a partnership with the most trafficked porn site on the internet is a question I'm forced to leave open-ended. My personal pet theory is that it has something to do with the fact that the world makes no sense, and human beings are all completely out of their goddamn minds. But I digress. In the grander scheme of things, there may indeed be some useful takeaways here. First off, the trick of using timestamps to artificially lower difficulty is one that has actually been known about long enough to get its own name, the time warp exploit. One can find discussions of the attack vector on Bitcoin forums from years ago. In some sense, what made the attack work in Verge is their use of the newer, fancier, dark gravity wave difficulty adjusting algorithm, in which difficulty is tweaked with every new block, as opposed to, say, Bitcoin, where difficulty is tweaked only every 2016 blocks. With adjusting difficulty being so spaced out, discrete increments may at first glance seem like an odd design decision. This hack makes it clear that it's actually a security precaution. Should there be some way to slightly lower mining difficulty in Bitcoin, the assailant can only do so once every 2 weeks, rendering the results negligible, compared to Verge, where they can do so once every 30 seconds. Interestingly, one of the purported benefits of Dark Gravity Wave is specifically that it's supposed to be immune to the time warp exploit. Given how decisively such a claim has now been disproven, other currencies using it ought to be at minimum a bit nervous. As for the use of five mining algorithms, while from a distance this appears to be a worthy experiment in economically encouraging decentralization, it again introduces new complexities, which inevitably increase the likelihood of unforeseen vulnerabilities emerging. In both cases, this hack presents a strong argument for tending towards sticking to things proven to work, and to be wary of overcomplicating things and thereby introducing unnecessary risks when people's financial assets are involved, which I suppose means 2 points for Team Bitcoin. There's a larger point to be made here. Software developers, as much as we're loath to admit it, are in the final analysis only human. Even when underlying security principles seem perfectly sound, there's always room for error. Unexpected attack vectors emerge, trade-offs get poorly estimated, and then, of course, there'll always be good old-fashioned bugs. That software doesn't always work the way we want it to, and that such malfunctions can lead to the loss of funds shouldn't be particularly shocking to anyone in 2018. But when that software is, in fact, money, it's worth an extra layer of precaution. Given that most of us don't have the spare time to conduct a thorough code review of every project we invest in, the best guards against disaster are to put more trust in things with a proven track record of working properly, and whose development ethos veers on the conservative side. And should you want to stake some funds in more experimental, move fast and break things and raise money style projects, at least be aware of the risks involved. Most importantly, pressure from the community for due diligence in trying to mitigate future disasters is ultimately the best defense. I believe it was George Santayana who said, quote, "Those who fail to learn from the security holes of the past are doomed to re-implement them," end quote. Words to heed by, lest we unexpectedly find ourselves on the verge of doing the time warp again. Update May 22nd. It seems we are indeed doing the time warp again. The same vulnerability is being exploited again as we speak. The word is that this time the hackers used two mining algorithms instead of one. Stay tuned. All right, and there you have it. I thought that was a wonderful breakdown of the Verge hack, and I had just not known at all that this hack had been exploited back in April, because I had only heard about it, I guess it was yesterday, yeah, the 22nd. So that's pretty crazy, and I really, really appreciate this breakdown, because I could not find another good example of it. I mean, I had, you know, there's some Twitter posts and stuff about it, but this is one of the best full breakdowns of what happened, and I learned a lot in this one, and I really, really enjoyed it. So this is yet another, I guess you could say, support or backing of the concept that this is not a straightforward game. There are so many nuances to the security features, and these are open networks. Like this is essentially this was a breakdown of the entire protocol regulation of itself. I mean, there's supposed to be a set issuance schedule, and this is simply essentially just said, well, nope, we're going to take the next 3 weeks worth of inflation, and we're going to pack it into the next 2 hours. Like, that's a terrible violation of the supposed consensus rules of the network. And I honestly can't believe that I did not know about this until yesterday and somehow completely missed this back in April. So the fact that this has happened multiple times now, and it's after they already supposedly hard-forked to fix it, that's not a good sign. It's really bad. And honestly, I mean, Goldman is much more knowledgeable on the entire thing than I am of Verge and everything. I mean, I vaguely knew a lot of these details about Verge, but when I first saw Verge, it just seemed like a weak application of already existing technology posing as totally new stuff. They called themselves a privacy token, but as far as I can see, and I had a conversation, I asked one of the developers in, I think their Slack at the time, maybe they was Telegram, I can't remember, I asked one of them, is there any obfuscation in the actual blockchain? And he got defensive, and he said, no, you don't want to do that, because you need to be able to prove your payment, and that would be bad, so we make it just so that the person itself is obscured, because they put Tor and IPFS integration into the wallet itself and the propagation. And all I could think, with everything that they were claiming was this huge benefit to privacy, all I could think was, like, you could just make a Bitcoin wallet that does all of that same stuff, and it would be, for all intents and purposes, absolutely no different than if you did it with Verge. It's still a completely open blockchain. There's no obfuscation. There's no mixing. It's literally just the wallet default hides your IP address. And that seems really weak, and there's not really anything innovative there. So I already took issue with that even back then. But I at least kind of thought, okay, well, maybe the mining algorithm things is, maybe there's some benefit to that, or it could actually lead to more decentralization. But clearly the exact opposite is true. So the one caveat I essentially gave them was that, okay, well, maybe you've got something here. Turns out to be their biggest vulnerability and their biggest problem, which they seem to not know how to fix and may very well just keep happening. So like he said, we'll keep watching this one unfold. Now, being a big fan of the Austrian theory of economics, I did take a bit of an issue, and I wouldn't bring it up except that it just kind of made me cringe, with a single line in this article. And that line was referring to to the claim that because there are five algorithms that are separated over the network, that supposedly this meant that the resources spent on all five algorithms was supposed to be even out. And then the quote was, the comment that made me go, really? Was, reality, however, often has a way of stubbornly refusing to conform to the axioms of free market economics. And I don't know if he meant to use the word axioms or if he meant to say it in this way, but it felt like a jab at Austrian school economics. And so maybe this is a little silly, but I really want to break this down. So first, let's start with a disclaimer. Like I said, I'm an Austrian school fanboy, so I have a little bit of tribal blood that I'm team free market. So, you know, anything that I'm saying here is probably a little overdone with the statement, but the statement is so wrong that I just want to address it. So maybe this is a misapplication of the word axiom, but an axiom is just a truism. It's a basic deducible truism of economic reality. It's essentially like saying gravity exists, or it's saying you can't have your cake and eat it too, because if you eat your cake, the cake is gone. That's an axiom. And to say that this doesn't align with, quote, free market axioms, like, an axiom is not a statement of what the economy might look like at any given time. It's a deduced, undeniable truth. So it's analogous to saying, like, air pressures and temperatures will always balance out. But then, you know, somebody points at a storm and says, well, it looks like reality doesn't adhere to the natural weather axioms. Well, the storm itself is the result of trying to balance out those axioms. So the statement is a bit of a straw man. It's making up the idea that there are these axioms which are free market only, or that, God forbid, Verge developers are some pioneers of free market economics. But if economic axioms don't line up with reality, then they're just wrong. It's not free market economics, it's just bad economics. Axioms are just tools for observation. Like, they're not declarations on a particular outcome. So, and it would be like saying, if I throw something into the air, gravity will bring it back down. That's not a claim that everything in the air is going to fall. It's just an undeniable characteristic of gravity. So if it doesn't fall back down, if I throw a ball in the air and it doesn't come back down, it's not violating physical axioms. We should simply be looking for a reason that the ball didn't fall. And it's the axiom by which we should go, where the fuck is the ball? Because otherwise, if we had no default truth to compare it to, there would be nothing interesting going on. The ball falling or the ball flying would be irrelevant. It's like, who cares? There's no axiom that should make it do one or the other. Instead, we should be wondering, did the ball sprout wings and an engine? Was there a strong updraft that took it higher? Did a bird snatch it out of the middle of the sky? But without that economic axiom, or excuse me, that physical axiom, the gravity axiom, we would have no reason to investigate further. And that's exactly what we're doing here. That's exactly what this entire article is he's taking economic axioms and trying to figure out what happened in Verge. Why did somebody attack? Which what we see is actually just a misapplication of economic axioms. It's like the apex of Petri dish economics, is that let's say we're taking the claim that all five algorithms should have equal resources. That might be true in a perfectly controlled and isolated environment, if there are no external factors. But clearly Verge is not a cryptocurrency in an isolated environment. It merely shows that the Verge developers had no idea how to properly take those economic axioms into account. So because one of those algorithms had much more efficient hardware and was particularly vulnerable thanks to externalities to other parts of the market or other crypto markets that specialized in that specific algorithm, the attacker was able to utilize the fastest means on the most vulnerable algorithm to create new Verge. So it actually demonstrates a couple of economic axioms, that the attacker was a rational actor trying to maximize their gain based on specific information at their disposal, that not everyone had the exact same subset of information, and they took the path of least resistance to get there. They didn't use the less vulnerable algorithms and try to attack it. He used the most vulnerable algorithm. So that's how we use economic axioms to explain why the attacker did anything in the first place. Verge has nothing to do, and the claim that these five algorithms are going to balance out perfectly has absolutely zero to do with free market economic axioms. They're a consequence of bad design, poor application, and complete misunderstanding of how those axioms are going to affect their protocol. So I just wanted to say that. That kind of rubbed me the wrong way because it was such an ignorant statement, and the whole rest of the article was so good that it hurt me particularly bad. I was like, come on, man. You're smart. You clearly know what you're talking about. Leave it alone if you don't know anything about economics. It'd be the equivalent of me writing an article detailing and thoroughly explaining the circumstances or actions that led to some engine failure and a plane crash, but then really quick throwing in a jab that reality doesn't seem to align with those silly fluid dynamic axioms, like the shitty plane design is a result of dumb physicists and not engineers. It's not exactly the most intelligent criticism. But, you know, whatever. It was a single statement, and maybe I'm reading way, way too much into it. But Maybe in the future we don't use the word free market economic axioms to describe bad developers. But yeah, the rest of this was absolutely great, and that's the only point that I disagree with him on, and maybe that required much, much less explanation, and it wasn't even meant that way, but that's kind of the way it sounded, and it's the way I took it, so I figured I'd address it just for fun. Again, that one was by Daniel Goldman. The guy is clearly very knowledgeable and has a couple other good articles on the Abacus Crypto Journal, and I'm hoping I can find more work from him in other places. We got other stories here. Let's see how much he's got here. Latest. It looks like most of it's on the Abacus, the Crypto Abacus Journal. But I will link to both of them, so go ahead, please check them out and follow Daniel Goldman as well as the Abacus Crypto Journal if you find other things that you're interested in. But I'm definitely going to keep an eye on it because I really, really liked this article. You know, minor criticism aside, it was really informative, and it's really good to have somebody that you feel like you can rely on to explain some of the technical stuff that's going on, because honestly, it's hard to get this information any other way. You're always having to trust other people, and that was a really good article. So I appreciate that, Daniel Goldman, and don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and Medium as well at The Crypto Economy. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I've been having a little bit of a problem in the last couple days. It doesn't look like my iTunes episodes are propagating, so I sent a message to the iTunes crew, and hopefully that will get sorted out, but it's not showing up in my feeds. It's showing up in my account, but not in my feeds. So if you are having any problem with that and you don't seem to be getting the episodes, well, I guess if you don't hear this one, you won't know. But send me a message if you're think you're having a problem still, just so that I can make sure it's addressed. But yeah, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and don't forget to share it with all your friends in crypto so they too can hear all the best articles in the crypto economy. All right, guys, thanks for listening, and take it easy.